We will sing verse 27. Ikayano sa pifalas chimuras chatira sa panchavina sadatma satatagasa vitapana vaksha tasa shiridi kagaya diviksha. The body, the total body and the individual body are of the same composition, may figuratively be called the original tree. From this tree, which fully depends on the ground of material nature, come two kinds of fruit, the enjoyment of happiness and the suffering of distress. The cause of the tree forming its three roots is association with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The fruits of bodily happiness have four tastes: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are experienced through five senses for acquiring knowledge in the midst of six circumstances: lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. The seven layers of bark covering the tree are skin, blood, muscle, fat, bone, marrow, and semen. And the eight branches of the tree are the five gross and three subtle elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Tree of the body has nine hollows: eyes, ears, nostrils, mouth, rectum, and genitals, and 10 leaves, 10 airs passing through the body. In this tree of the body, there are two birds. One is the individual soul, and the other is the super soul. So what did we learn in the first class? What is, in one word, what can we describe the Lord as?
Satyam.
Param Satyam. He is Satyam. Okay? So the first four verses of the prayers of the demigods, Garbhastuti, are describing the position of the Lord. He's Satyam. First thing we learn. Second four verses, the glories of his shelter. And the last seven verses, his incarnations. So we'll be finishing the verses on his position, and we'll be starting some verses on shelter. That is, on his shelter is verse 30 and 31. We'll be hearing today and tomorrow. You'll be hearing 32 and 33. And the rest of the verses from Burijampuru. So here this verse is describing two things. What are the two things that this verse is describing? Atma and Paramatma. That's in the verse. But if you want to extend it a little bit further, yes?
The analogy.
The analogy is, it's related to Atma and Paramatma. Our Atma and Paramatma are within the
fruits, the fruits.
No, there's more than that type of fruit. Yeah, there's two types of fruits. But I mean, the whole analogy is referring to? Yes. Yes, the individual body and the universal body. So both of them can be described as a tree. We've heard of the tree of the universe in Bhagavad Gita, banyan tree, with its roots up and its branches downward. So we are living in such a tree, with the roots upward and the branches downward. That is the tree of our body. Did you ever think about that? Yes, our body is now being described. And in our body, it is, the ground is up. And that's why it's so uncomfortable being in this body. It's up. We're upside down, actually. Where Prabhupada said that in one lecture. I was there in Calcutta, and he said, "Yes, imagine if someone was going to hold you upside down. How long can you tolerate that?" So we are upside down in this body. We're in an upside because the roots are at the top, and the roots are the modes. The ground is at the top, the modes of nature. The branches are at the bottom, and the fruits are at the bottom. And four kinds of fruits: dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Five senses, and we experience these fruits through five senses, knowledge-acquiring senses. That is, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and tongue and what did I forget? Eyes, ears, nose, tongue. Maybe there's two in the mouth. Anyway, so these are the four fruits and six places, six ways we are experiencing the four fruits: lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. So if you meditate on this, your desire for these fruits will diminish. The fruits of bodily happiness. And there's also happiness and distress, two types of fruits, and four types of fruits, so different kinds of fruits. Then seven layers of bark. So all of this refers not only to our body, but the body of the universe. We learned that in the fifth canto, description of the universe, that the yogis, when they move the prana from the lowest chakra up to the highest, they are also moving it from the different lokas. The lowest chakra is Bhuloka, and then the next chakra of the universe is Bhuvarloka, and then we have Swargaloka, that's the third chakra, that's underneath the heart, and then there's the heart chakra, that's Maharloka, and the throat chakra is Janaloka, and the Tapa and Satya. Tapa Loka is between the eyes, third eye, and then the Satya Loka is the lotus of Lord Brahma. So the yogi, when he brings the life air through these different chakras, he can access these different lokas by his mystic powers. So this is something not to look forward to. We don't worry about that. We don't want to go through that process. We have our process is different. We depend on Krishna, and he takes us wherever he wants. So yes, but the fact is that this body and the universal body are very similar. Prabhupada gives some examples of it, that the perspiration, sometimes it is said also that the Garbha ocean is the urine of the Lord. Sometimes perspiration, it's salty because it's the Lord's urine. So therefore we also have ours, but it's not very much, whereas his is like a whole ocean. His perspiration, his urine, is like a whole ocean. So now we are analyzing the body. And two birds in the body, Atma and Paramatma. So in our body there is Atma, that is us, and Paramatma is, what is his name, according to the, which Vishnu is he? Shirdakshai. So then we have the Atma of this universe. Who is the Atma of this? No. I said, the question was not, who is Paramatma? Paramatma is, yes, Garbharakshai Vishnu. Who is Atma of the universe? Brahma, yes. Brahma's body is the whole universe, and he's the Atma, he's the soul, and Supersoul is Garbharakshai Vishnu. Then of the gigantic universe, there is Karanadakshai Vishnu. And there is another Brahma there too. There is another Brahma with Mahavishnu. If you read Brahma Samhita, you will discover another Brahma who is there with Mahavishnu. So here we have it. In Krishna book, Prabhupada explains why the body is compared to a tree. Before I read it, does anybody have any idea why is the body compared to a tree? There is a certain reason, and if you know Sanskrit, then you'll know the reason. But most of us don't know Sanskrit. Yes? What's that? Okay, so she's saying that the tree has the symptoms of six changes, and that's why the body is... Well, that's a good reason. There's another reason. Yes.
Vriksha,
yes. Cut off. That's it. Time. Yes. The reason why the body is compared to a tree is because in Sanskrit, the word is riksha. Prabhupada says here.
Vriksha.
Vriksha. I'll read it. It's from Krishna book. Krishna book Prabhupada says, a tree stands on the ground. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. This material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in due course of time. A tree is called Vriksha. Vriksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth because it is influenced by time. So this body will be cut off. Yes. Yes, it will be cut off. And the universal body will also be cut off at a certain point. Therefore, it is compared to a vriksha, a tree. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He's existing while the material manifestation is continuing. And when it will be dissolved, he will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. Okay, so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a conversation here. Krishna is saying something to the demigods in between verse 27 and 28. So what is Krishna saying? Oh, devas, it is said that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are the masters of this world. So why do you say I am the creator? The next statement of the demigods answers this question. Those whose minds are covered by your maya see Brahma and others as independent. Those whose minds are not covered see only you and see Brahma and others as your expansions only. So what Sanskrit from verse 26 proves this point? Remember, we studied verse 26 this morning. Trisatyam, okay. Trisatyam. Any other of the... That's one. Satyasi Yonim, okay. Satyasi Satyam, yes. Nihitam cha Satye. So many of those words prove this point here that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is making. And this next verse will say the same thing. Verse 28. The efficient cause of this material world manifested with its many varieties as the original tree is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this material world. And after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. So that's Tri Satyam, what we just learned. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation, but theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. So the materialistic people, Kamsa, people of Kamsa's class, they see the tree. They see the body. They see the external. The scientists, they just see the external. They don't see what is within. So their vision is like that. They are covered. So if you're a devotee, then what will your vision be? As opposed to the non-devotees, we know that they don't see. Anyway, this verse says what they don't see. So what do the devotees see? What is their vision then? If that's what the non-devotees' vision is, what is the vision of the learned devotees? He sees the soul. Yes, he sees Krishna behind everything. So in the purport, maybe about four or five lines down, those who are truly vipassanic learned are those who have reached the platform of understanding and observing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any condition of life. So here's a practical application right away from this verse, that if you can see Krishna behind anything, any condition of life, you are vipassanic, you are very learned person. Then you can be called learned. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena sandasa deva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Learned devotees accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. So any condition of life, Prabhupada specifically refers to distress. Means when distress comes, a learned devotee sees Krishna. It's coming as distress. When a devotee is in distress, he sees the Lord has appeared as distress just to relieve or purify the devotee from the contamination of the material world. While one is within this material world, one is in various conditions, and therefore a devotee sees a condition of distress as but another feature of the Lord. Tatenukampam susamikshamana. A devotee, therefore, regards distress as a great favor of the Lord, because he understands he's being cleansed of contamination. Wow. Who is a devotee? We see, okay, I tolerate this distress. I can tolerate. Yes, I should tolerate. But do we say, thank you, Krishna? No. We don't say thank you when we get sick with the flu and the fever and when we can't do our service. And we say, why me? Why is this happening to me of all people? I mean, I understand why it happens to everyone else, but me? It's very difficult to understand. But it happens. It does happen to me. So this is how the devotee sees it. Prabhupada is immediately, he's applying it to conditions of distress. So then he quotes Gita. Deshamaham samutarta mityasam sarasagarat. The appearance, now this sentence, very, very important sentence. If you want to underline a sentence, this is it. The appearance of distress is a negative process intended to give the devotee relief from this material world, which is called mrityu saṃsāra, or the constant repetition of birth and death. So what is the appearance of distress for the devotee?
Negative process.
To give relief from material world. Okay, negative process. Have we all experienced the negative process?
Yes.
And positive process also? What is the positive process?
Krishna consciousness.
Yes, just be Krishna conscious. Just chant the holy name and be happy, like Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati, when his brahmacharis would get sick. No medicine, no doctor, just chant Hare Krishna. That's the positive process. Positive. Chant 64 rounds and chant and be happy. And all your problems will be solved. So if you can't take to the positive process, certainly will experience the negative process. If you cannot do voluntary austerity in Vrindavan, surely you will experience forced austerity in Vrindavan. So this is the purport here. A non-devotee is therefore never perturbed in distress, but a devotee welcomes distress as another feature of the Lord. Sarvam kalv idam brahma. So what feature of the Lord is distress for a devotee? That is my question. What can you compare this distress to? Okay, what feature of the Lord is this?
Mercy.
Do you see a picture in your mind? Those of you who are visual, can you see an analogy or a picture of Krishna in this feature relating to you? The mother cat carrying the kitten, that's one. Mother cat is carrying the kitten and the kitten's feeling the teeth. Mother cat is taking the kitten to the spiritual world. That's one analogy. It's any other pictures, yeah?
I don't know. I usually visualize
Nisringadev with Rani Kashyapu, but instead of Rani Kashyapu, it's you on his lap. And he's taking out, yes, one devotee had that experience.
I should, you're supposed to pray like that. Pray,
yes, we are praying to Nisringadev to remove our demoniac desires for material happiness and make us fearless in this material world, the path of birth and death. Okay, so Mother Kitten, any other, and the Shingadev is there, taking out our anartas, when this is what happens in these times of distress. Any other pictures come to your mind of the Lord, this feature of the Lord as distress? Universal form. If you see the Lord as a universal form, then you will suffer distress.
He's also compared to the rose and the thunderbolt, those two
Okay, rose and the thunderbolt, or the thorns on the rose plant. Yes?
Very famous Sufi poet Rumi, he said that suffering is the proof in the court of law. So if you if you come to the court and try to prove that you're a lover of God, you have to bring a suffering and show there's a proof that we are lovers.
Okay.
Just like the carpet, when the carpet is being dusted, de-dusted.
Clean.
Dust it off.
Vacuumed. Or you shake. Oh, beat it. Oh, yeah, in India. Okay, I've been in the West. Last 2 months.
Carpet. He beats it very hard, but he does not beat the carpet. He just beats off the dust. So when the Lord sends the distress, it's not that he's trying to make you suffer. He just removes the dust.
Okay, when he beats the carpet, it's not he's beating you. He's just taking the dust off. And there's another verse. Yeah.
Interesting. There was another
description
of the word prema.
Burned through. Yes.
A description of prema of God.
Yes.
It is expressed by the gopis is that there's love still when there's good cause for not.
Yeah.
When there's reason for.
Even when there's reason not to love. And then there's Bhurijan's favorite example that we hear in the retreat all the time about being burnt in millions of fires. You take the gold or whatever it is and you burn it a million times, and then you take it out and you burn it another million times. You burn it again, and every time you burn it, it becomes more clean and more pure.
This is another example. I think it's coming from Sri Vishnu. In the place where the gopis couldn't go to Rasa, then to the Rasa place, that the gardener, he tries one mango. And when he sees that the mango is ripe, he orders the servants to collect all the mangoes.
Mm-hmm.
And some go to the king's table immediately, and some are a little bit unripe.
Unripe.
So he applies a pungent chemical to those unripe mangoes.
Oh.
And then they become ripe under those pungent chemicals. So the suffering of it.
The king, okay, the servant of the king picks mangoes, and the ones that are ripe, he gives to the king immediately, and those who are unripe, he applies a pungent chemical. So all of us unripe mangoes are going to have some pungent chemicals, maybe.
There's a story of the teacup.
There's
a story of the teacup.
Teacup?
Told by...
Clay cup?
Yeah, they're told by Sachinan Maharaj.
Acha?
It's a long story.
Okay, well, Well, if there's time after class. Okay, we'll have that. We'll see.
Basically, it's a lump of clay who is speaking to the potter.
Mm-hmm.
The lump of clay is being molded and turned into a world around as a pot.
And baked.
And all the while she's like, oh, come on, stop it, I can't handle this. Can you see my baby?
Okay. So this is the chest for a devotee. This cannot be understood by a non-devotee. But a devotee can see this because he is vipassit. A devotee can actually see there is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no second entity. Ekam eva dityam. There is only the Lord who presents himself in different energies. Okay, and also this is the difference between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. The devotee, he connects with Yogamaya. When he has this vision, then he connects. And if he forgets and he thinks, oh, it's due to this and that, then it's Mahamaya acting. I mean, if he forgets, he goes in the material world, tries to rectify the distress. And there are some nice quotes from... I got it. Oh, yeah. This is about the devotee being protected by the Lord. I had it for verse 33, but Bhurijan will speak on that verse, so I'll give you the quotes today. Chaitanya Bhagavat Adikanda. Sharira manasa divya vaya se echa manishha Bhautika Sikatam Klesha Bhatante Hari Sang Shayam. This is 322.37. How can persons completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service be put into miseries pertaining to the body, mind, nature, and other men and living creatures? Garuda Purana says, Nachadurvas Sasa Shapa Vajram Chapi Sachipate Hantum Samartam Purusham Hidishte Madhusudane. One who has realized Madhusudana within his heart cannot be killed by the curse of Durvasa or thunderbolt of Indra, husband of Sachi. Naradiya Purana, Yatta Puja Paro Vishnu Stacha Vikno Nabadate Raja Chataskaras Chapi Vyadayascha Nasantihi Pritta Pishach Kushmanda Graha Balagahastata Dakinyara Shasaschaiva Vibhadaste Chitarchakam. Neither a king, a thief, nor disease can create obstacles for one engaged in worshipping Lord Vishnu. A person engaged in the worship of Achyuta cannot be checked by ghosts, witches, evil spirits, planets, sorceresses, or other demons. And he says one may also refer to Bhakti Sandarbha in this regard. So Jiva Goswami says they are bound by Krishna's love and thus they walk fearlessly. The devotees. They have no fear. Krishna, not the devotee, worries about the protection of the devotee. So this is from Jiva Goswami, that part. Anyway, and the rest was Chaitanya Bhagavat. So the stress, so two lessons. If Krishna is behind everything, what two lessons can we learn? As actually, oh, I didn't tell you the second lesson. Okay, I'll read the end of the purport. First lesson we already discussed. Here's the second lesson. Not being disturbed by the Lord's various features, one should concentrate upon and worship the Supreme Lord, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. This should be the guiding principle of one's life. So first lesson for a devotee is what? If you see Krishna, if Krishna is everything and he's behind everything, then what? What is the vision of the devotee? Yes, Shoda?
Negative experiences of purification.
Yes. Distress is welcome. It's a negative process of purification. And the second lesson? Yes.
Therefore we should worship the Supreme
Lord. Yes, therefore we should only worship Krishna. Because he's behind everything. So if you go to somebody else for help, it won't necessarily work. Unless Krishna sanctions that. And so Bharijan gives a challenge that we should try to see Krishna in everything. Try it for 10 minutes. Or for 1 hour. Or maybe for 1 day, try to see Krishna in everything. Or for the rest of our lives. That was Bharijan's challenge in his class on this. I thought that's very nice. See Krishna in everything. Then another point is, what is this negative process? So we kind of discussed it. We discussed it. And the word I have here is what Adi Purush Prabhu gave us, beating. Negative process is like having a beating in one sense. And the positive process is be Krishna conscious. Yes. Attraction. Attraction to Krishna by his sweetness. So these are the two ways we can go. Attraction isn't so easy though, because we're so attracted to other things. So therefore Krishna has to come and give us this purification. And there is a nice sentence in the first canto, Bhishma Dev's. He's talking about this time, Kala Rupa. He says, I don't understand the effect of time. Even the Pandavas had to suffer so much, even though they were Krishna's friend. And then in a purport, Prabhupada explains that when Krishna wants to teach something to the people, he teaches it through the devotee. So there's a Bengali saying or a Hindi saying, I think it's Bengali, that the mother-in-law teaches the daughter-in-law through the daughter. So Krishna teaches the world through the devotee. And Prabhupada, he said, Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was already on a level of friendship with Krishna, so he didn't really need to learn Bhagavad Gita. But he taught Arjuna so that the whole world could learn. He taught and Pariksit heard Bhagavatam just for the whole world. So we could have Bhagavatam now. So therefore, Prabhupada gives a real therefore in that purport. A devotee's duty is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as benedictions. Devotee's duty. Imagine. Ungrudgingly. Yeah, we could accept, but we may complain. You know, this happened to me, and you know, why did they do that and that? Ungrudgingly. Uncomplainingly. It's very hard. Okay, we may accept. Okay, I'm tolerating this now, you know, this is happening. But are we ungrudgingly accepting? That's a real grudge, means you hold a grudge, either to Krishna or to somebody or who is purifying you, who is the instrument of your purification. We may not appreciate the instrument of our purification very much. But actually, Prabhupada says, ungrudgingly, a devotee's duty is to ungrudgingly accept tribulation from the Lord as a benediction. Benediction. So if you're in that mood, then Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. This is wonderful. What's happening now is so wonderful, even though I don't appreciate, I may not be able to appreciate it right now, what's happening to me, but it's for the better, and Krishna's purpose is there. So that is, my whole life is an experience of that. You just go back, every time I change a temple, I don't want to leave that temple, and I'm so attached, but then I leave, and then it's for the better. And then, every time, Calcutta to Bombay, didn't want to leave the deities. Bombay to Goa, I didn't want to leave the temple, and I was out in Goa. And then Goa to Vrindavan, I didn't want to leave Goa. Oh my God, back to austerities, especially Vrindavan. And then when I got here, I understood, yes, this is the best thing. And now I'm leaving Vrindavan, oh no, traveling. But what can you do? Yeah, I mean, it's not just tolerate, but accept it as Krishna's blessing. Yes. So, yes.
One thing that I tried to practice that does seem to help is that if it's something that's very painful, and I would just say, if I've ever done this,
Okay, so when something happens, you question whether I must have done this. Yes. If I've ever done this, please never let me do this again. Yes, because we have the mentality to do these things. So the purpose of the punishment or the negative process of purification is so we remove that mentality and we don't do it again. So there is a lesson to be learned. There's a lesson to be learned from our negative purification. And as soon as we learn the lesson, then we're free. We don't suffer anymore from the purification. We may still get the purification, but we don't suffer anymore because we know why it's happening. We understand the reason behind. We understand the cause of it, and what is the necessary change that has to be made in our mentality or our behavior that will help us to move on. So this is always when things like this happen. We have to reassess our life and reassess our mentality and reassess our behavior. And see what must I change for the better so I can move towards Krishna. So verse 29. Let's all sing it. Piparshivapanyavabhata atma shema yalokasya characharasya sarvapapannani sukavaharni satama patrani muhukalani. O Lord, you are always in full knowledge, and to bring all good fortune to all living entities, you appear in different incarnations, all of them transcendental to the material creation. When you appear in these incarnations, you are pleasing to the pious and religious devotees, but for non-devotees, you are the annihilator. So same person, different result. How do the non-devotees see Krishna in these incarnations? Yes, in Sanskrit? Mrityu, Kala Rupa. Yes, Kala Rupa. And the devotees? How do the devotees see Krishna? Amrita? Purusha? Yes, my sweet Lord. The same Nisringadev came in front of Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. And for Hiranyakashipu, he was Kala Rupa. And for Prahlad, he was my dear father. It was Vatsalya Ras. It's even described that Nisringadev licked Prahlad like a lion cub, like a lion mother licks its cub. And so if you go to Mayapur and you see the Nisringadev deity, then it's not fearful for the devotees. You feel like, oh, it's my father. You feel very, especially when he has chandan on him. He's very sweet. You know, his smile is not ferocious. He becomes like a little cat or something. Very, very sweet smile. And you feel very protected. Feel that Vatsalya Ras, that Prahlad felt very protected and safe in his shelter. So yes, this is our relationship with Krishna. Now in this material world, we need protection. And Krishna is our only protector. So this is the last verse to establish position of the Lord. Again, Bhurija mentions that Krishna is an embryo here. So if you want to know, you have to ask Bhurijan that question. Tomorrow he's coming, so you can have a question. Is he actually an embryo? So the next four verses, 30 to 33, describe the glories of the Lord's shelter. How is he the shelter? Now we're talking about distress. Now we must take shelter. Verse 30. Svayam buja shakila sattathamni samadhina veshita che chasaike taparpatena mahatpitena kurvanti govatsa param bahavatiyam. O lotus-eyed Lord, but concentrating with meditation in your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nations, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajans, great saints, sages, and devotees. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nations as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. So our boat has come back again. For us, the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna. Again, it's compared to the ocean is compared to hoofprint of a calf, govatsaparam. And what is the Sanskrit for boat? Parapotena. Parapotena. Mahatkritena. We can go beyond the Mahatkritena. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the previous verse spoke of protection of the Lord, and this verse describes the form of the protection. What form will this protection take? And Svayam, personally, indicates the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. So this is a wonderful verse. The devotees can easily cross, and this whole section, this one, and the next one are describing the boat. And verse 32 is describing who misses the boat of the lotus feet because they offend the boat. It's the impersonalists. And 33, how the impersonalists fall down. And 33, how the devotees fall down, but they still don't lose anything. They don't get lost. Krishna still takes them. So these four verses are very interesting. Today's will be description of the boat, these two verses. So the last, second to last paragraph here of the purport. Here the Lord is described as Ambujaksha, or lotus-eyed. By seeing the eyes of the Lord, which are compared to lotus flowers, one becomes so satisfied, one does not want to turn his eyes to anything else. We heard about this at the Govardhan retreat by this one devotee, I forgot his name, who was telling a story of, what's his name, Rasa something Khan, one Muslim, devotee. Muslim, he was a Muslim. Rasa Khan. He was a Muslim, and he was attracted to some Hindu boy in Delhi. And then some Brahmins saw his attraction and said, if only you had such attraction for Krishna or Gopal. And he overheard them and he said, what did you say? And they said, nothing, nothing, you know, because he was very famous for killing people. Took out his knife, he said, if you don't tell me, then that's it for you. So they said, oh yes, we said, if only you had that attraction for Gopal. And so then who is this Gopal? Where is he? So one of them took a picture out from his turban and showed him Giriraj lifting Govardhan Hill, Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Srinathji. And so this Muslim guy went to Govardhan in search of Srinathji. And he went up to the top where the temple was, but they wouldn't allow him in because he was a Muslim. And so then he went down and started to fast. And then the pujari had a dream to let him in. And so the pujari went down and got him, and he brought in and he was initiated. And he saw the eyes, it was true, and as soon as he saw the picture, that was it. He wanted to see that boy. Let me see that boy. Srinathji. So he became, and then he wrote, so he became a great Brijbasi saint, and he wrote books of poetry in simple Brijbasi language. So yes, his eyes, as soon as he saw the eyes of the Lord, that was it. He didn't turn his eyes to anything else. The Prophet says, simply by seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, a devotee is at once fully absorbed in the Lord in his heart. So when we see Krishna in the temple, when we see Shyam Sundar, the Lord goes from our eyes to our heart. If we actually see him properly, Prabhupada is saying that. As soon as you see this form of Krishna, then you're absorbed in the Lord in the heart. And he would, in this early days, there was a picture in Bhagavad Gita, early Bhagavad Gita, of two halves of the picture. One half was a yogi meditating and he was seeing Supersoul in the heart in his meditation. And the next half was the devotee chanting japa in front of the deity. And Prabhupada was saying, they're both the same. The yogi seeing, having the darshan of Paramatma, and the devotee having darshan of Krishna in the temple, chanting his japa. They're both the same level. Non-different. So this is what Prabhupada is saying here. A yogi is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he has no other business than to think of the Lord always within the heart. So in one of our cantos, we've read so many, I can't remember which one, but I think it's either Prithu or Juva. One of them retired at the end of life and went to Badri Kashram, and they were doing deity worship. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe Juva. They were worshiping the deity, and then, yeah, it was Juva. And then the airplane came. It was Juva. And the airplane came from Vaikuntha. Yes. So someday we'll be doing deity worship and the airplane will come for us. Yes. Huh?
I know.
He had to finish his puja first. He didn't even go on it. Yeah, he'd got the blessings of all the sages. He offered respects to all the devotees. He finished he took a bath even. He was really into his sadhana, this one. He took a bath, and he did everything, and then he went in the airplane. So, yes, he was into his sadhana there. And then finally he went on the airplane. So one day, it's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur also. He said, it's Jadin Grihe, Bhajana Deki, Grihe Te Goloka Bahaya. He said, one day I was doing my puja, and I saw my whole house transformed into Goloka. And so that day will come, and we are doing our puja, and we'll be in Goloka. And we'll always be there. We won't come back. Of course, we'll be here to preach. Jivan Mukta, Sa Uchite. Jivan Mukta. So here, Samashitaye Parapalava Pavam Mahat Param Punyaya Shamarade Param Bhati Vatsa Param 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 Yadavi Paranatesham. Here is another boat of the lotus feet. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is a shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, enemy of the demon Mura. The ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. His goal is Param Param, or Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So now, in this verse, this is after the prayers of Lord Brahma, there is a distinction being made between, of course, the material ocean, which is an ocean of miseries, and Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So our boat is here in the material world. The boat of Krishna's lotus feet is here. That will be described more in the next verse. That we are in the material world, in that tree, with the eight branches and all that. We're in that tree, but at the same time, we're taking shelter of a boat. And that's the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. That boat is here in this material world. And we can get in the boat, that is our choice. Or we can jump out of the boat, that is our choice, at any moment. We can also jump out of the boat. But if we stay with the boat, then we'll find that this ocean we're trying to cross will become so small and so insignificant. And that's what happens at that point, is when our material desires appear insignificant. That is also in a prayer, I think, Narottam does. He's praying to Nityananda that when will my material desires, when will I get your blessings so my material desires will appear insignificant to me and I will see Vrindavan. And so that is the process. This process is recommended here by authorities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Sayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, and therefore we must take to this process in order to transcend nations. This is very easy, but we must follow in the footsteps of great personalities, and then success will be possible. In regard to the word Mahatkritena, it is also significant. The process shown by great devotees is not only for them, but also for others. So here's a nice sentence for anybody here to remember. If things are made easy, this affords facility for the person who has made them easy, and also for others who follow the same principles. So Prabhupada made it easy for us to follow these principles. So if we try to make it easy for others, it'll be easy for us too. If we try always thinking how to make it easy for others to become devotees, it'll become easy for us to become devotees also. Now this is a very nice, significant sentence. The process recommended in this verse for crossing the ocean of nations is easy not only for the devotee, but also for common persons who follow the devotee, Mahajano Yena Gatas Panta. So in the next verse, 31, more description of the boat and how it's in this material world and exactly what it is. Sayam Samutirya Sudhisharam Jaman Bhavarnavam bhimam adabhisalpida Bhavatparam bharhanavamatrate Nitaya yatha sat anugraho paman. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vanchikap Chiru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nations, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. So now we have another tree. What is this other tree? Kalpataru, lotus feet of Krishna. So we can take shelter of a big tree, and that's Krishna's lotus feet. It's also a boat, it's also a desire tree. So the boat that we're on is a desire tree. In another way of looking at it, we're on a boat. The boat's a desire tree. And we will see how to access this desire tree. Purport says, this statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home, back to Godhead. So do we all want to return home, back to Godhead?
Yes.
Or do we all want to stay here and preach? Both. Okay.
After preaching.
after preaching.
But preaching never finishes.
Yes, the world is always here.
This is the problem.
Don't worry. You will get your desire. But you have to be serious, Prabhupada says. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to Rupa Goswami said, Ramanda Paramita Kono Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. One can achieve the seat of Bhakti Lata, devotional service, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means, according to time, circumstances, and candidate, by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. So what is the duty of the Guru? Find the means to engage somebody in devotional service according to time, place, and circumstance. So not everybody will get the same medicine. Of course, Hare Krishna will be the same, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But the service may be different. The service that you get may be different. Some will remain brahmachari, some will be grihastha, some will make money, some will renounce. They're all for Krishna. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya who trains the devotee in suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. So, here another duty of the guru, train the devotee properly. The acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Another duty of the guru. So, all of you should become guru, so you should know your duty, that you should try to help bring devotees to devotional service, engage them in service. Just like Jayananda, he was engaging everybody, even people on the street, in building the Rath cart. And guess who one of his candidates was who helped him bang a nail in the cart? There was one person on the street just passing by. He said, "Oh, could you help me bang this nail?" First he had him hold the nail. No, it wasn't a beggar. No, not Mahanidhi. I don't know about Mahanidhi Swami.
He was asked to, Mahanidhi was engaged to
paint the swan. Paint the swan. Him too, wow, I didn't know that. So this one, he's one of our gurus now. And so he held the nail and he was praised. Oh, Jai Pataka Maharaj. He said, "You have held the nail so wonderfully. Let me see if you can hit it too." So then he gave him the hammer. And he hit the nail, you know, and he said, "Wow, I think you can really do this better than anyone I've ever seen." And so before he knew it, there he was, the whole day hammering nails in the Rath cart. Jai Pataka. So that was the beginning of his devotional service, hammering nails into the Rath cart, engaged by Jayananda Prabhu. So the expert acharya knows how to engage people. Who would know that from such a humble beginning, now he would have thousands and thousands of disciples all over the world? And it all started with hammering one nail into a Rath cart. So this is the expert acharya. I was just reading also a BTG article about Jayananda, that he would bring these devotees and he would remain the garbage collector and he would make the new people the temple president. He would say, you would make a good president. And Karandar was one of his new bhaktas, so Karandar became president and he was still taking out the garbage and building the Rath cart. And so, yes, he had his ways. The acharya's duty is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So this is a boat. Nectar of devotion is a boat, one of the boats. Thus is the duty of the acharya to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna conscious movement, the same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions. Because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible, one should not artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and method prescribed in the various books and literatures published by the authorities. Acharya gives a suitable method for crossing the ocean of nations by accepting the boat of the Lord's lotus feet. And if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya vihinaye mataste nishvala mataha. Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya. Otherwise, one's endeavor will be futile. Shanaratam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tadir charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame chaname hoy e apilas. One must worship lotus feet of the Acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over nations will surely be successful. So what is the Acharya Sampradaya compared to in this verse? What is it? What is the actual? What is it?
Desire tree?
Desire tree, yes. Desire tree and?
The boat.
It's the boat. It's the process. The boat is the process to cross the ocean. And it's also a desire tree. We'll get all the desires fulfilled by taking shelter of Acharya Sampradaya. Acharya Sampradaya is our boat. And this is what Prabhupada left. After he went to the other side of the ocean, of course he was already on the other side, but when he finally went, and we couldn't see him anymore with our senses, then he left this boat, Acharya Sampradaya. So, and this is what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. He says, Navam Atra Te Nidhaya, leaving the boat on the bank means devotees establish bhakti movements and then cross the ocean of material existence. By this act, others are able to cross over the ocean of repeated birth and death. So Prabhupada left ISKCON, and that's the boat, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Sadanugraho Bhavan, how are the devotees able to cross the ocean of birth and death? Because you, Shri Krishna, Bhavan, are merciful, anugraha, to the devotees, sat, and not to others. So Prabhupada in Krishna book also describes this. If one takes a boat to cross a river, the boat also goes to the other side. So when one reaches a destination, how can the same boat be available to those on this side? To answer this difficulty, the demigods say the boat of Lord's lotus feet is not taken away. Devotees still remaining on this side are able to pass over the ocean of material nature because the pure devotees do not take the boat with them when they cross over. When one simply approaches the boat, now here's an important point, the whole ocean of material nations is reduced to the size of the water in a calf's hoofprint. So, if you just approach the boat,
is enough.
Yes, then all the water shrinks to the size of water in a calf's hoofprint. Of course, we may still think the ocean is still there and it looks very big to us, but actually it's not. Prabhupada says, therefore, devotees do not need to take the boat to the other side. They simply cross the ocean immediately. Nice. Yes?
To the favorable devotional service, the last one is
Satavate.
Follow in the footsteps of the
Acharyas. Okay, favorable items, six favorable items, Satavate. So this is Satavrite. Therefore, devotees don't need to take the boat to the other side. They simply cross the ocean immediately. That will be the day when we get past Anartana Vritti. And then we will cross immediately the ocean. Prabhupada says, because us great saintly persons are compassionate toward all conditioned souls, the boat is still lying on this side. In other words, one can meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord at any time, and by so doing, one can cross over the great ocean of material existence. So Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, if we meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord at any time, we can cross immediately. You want to cross? And Prabhupada said, this is the way, Krishna book. He gave us in 1970, he gave us Krishna book. So we got this way immediately we can cross. And that he also says that in purport in Bhagavad Gita, you can become Krishna conscious in a second if you want. It's just a matter of two things. What are those two things? One is accepting and the other is understanding. Understanding and Prabhupada says understanding and accepting the fact. Now what's the fact? I am servant of Krishna, servant of a guru. So now we have some very inspiring information here about crossing the ocean. All you have to do is meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord at any time. Prabhupada talks about when he used to cross the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, and he says, how many Atlantic and Pacific Oceans are there in this universe? You can just imagine. He says, but actually, there is a great ocean of misery. And we heard about it in the third canto. There's an ocean of misery, ocean of tears, Bhavambhuti, great ocean of birth and death. So we can cross it by Krishna's lotus feet. So Prabhupada says, we should take with great faith, I'm now accepting this boat as my lifeboat. When the ship is going down in the ocean, when you're in the middle of an ocean and then you have to abandon ship, then you take a lifeboat. So we're in the middle of the ocean, so we need a lifeboat, and the lifeboat is Krishna's lotus feet, Prabhupada said. It's a lecture. In 1966, he gave this lecture in New York. The lifeboat of Krishna's lotus feet. And if you take shelter of this lifeboat, then it will shrink down. So one devotee in 1978, he wrote a Vyas Puj to Prabhupada, and it says, this verse describes your appearance. You've crossed the ocean, leaving us to burn in the fire of separation, but you've mercifully left behind the boat, and that's this ISKCON, with its programs, deities, devotees, books, and acharyas to carry on your mission. It can cross the ocean and help us approach Krishna's safe lotus feet. So all that remains is for us to take it up, so those who follow us may find the boat of knowledge intact and seaworthy. Boat of ISKCON. A few holes have developed maybe since Prabhupada left, but still the boat is going on.
Nothing irreparable.
Yes, nothing irreparable. We bail out the water sometimes. Have to bail it out, or repair the boat, or even make a new boat, but the boat keeps going. So, Jiva Goswami comments that bhakti is the internal energy of the Lord. When that energy flows inside a devotee, it is bhakti, and it is that which makes the heart of the devotee and the Lord melt. The only thing that melts the Lord's heart is bhakti, not misery. Not if you're miserable and you say, I'm miserable, help me. That's not going to melt the Lord's heart. Devotee, here it says, can give mercy out of the melting of his heart due to his remembrance of misery, but the Lord melts and is attracted only to bhakti itself. And then he says, humility, and this is Jiva Goswami's coming on this verse, humility is the instrument that attracts the Lord's mercy. Attracting the Lord, if you want to attract Krishna's mercy, devotee's mercy, Jiva Goswami recommends humility. Not only to attract the Lord's mercy, he says the measurement of bhakti is dainya, humility. And he says it's the characteristic, but who will receive bhakti, but not a characteristic directly of bhakti. He says the measurement of bhakti is dainya, and depending on how much dainya a devotee has, how much humility he has, he can hold mercy. A very profound statement by Jiva Goswami. Because the boat is the mercy of the devotees. And the more humble the devotee is, the more he can hold mercy and give mercy. So, Jiva Goswami says, devotional service empowers millions of devotees with the Lord's mercy. And in that way, the Lord will manifest his mercy. The mercy is either devotee's mercy or the mercy of association with devotees. Mercy is not independent. It is the Lord's mercy. And he says, the boat the devotees leave is parampara, their empowered disciples. That's the boat that Jiva Goswami says. Jiva Goswami says the boat is the empowered disciples of the Acharya. That is the boat of mercy. So, here one may ask, why doesn't the Lord personally arrange for this boat? Why is the arrangement made by my devotees instead of by me? Jiva Goswami is posing this question. Why not just the Lord? Why do you need the devotees? Here the demigods reply, you are merciful through your devotees, sad anugraho bhavan. So the mercy is coming through the devotees. It's not, okay, you got the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, kick out the devotees from the boat. I mean, that's who's going to be on the boat. And that's who's giving you the boat. So it's not just you and Krishna. It's through sad anugraho bhavan, means through the devotees. That's why you arrange your devotees to distribute your mercy to the others. So that's one interpretation by Jiva Goswami. Another interpretation is, your devotees are themselves your mercy. The mercy is the devotees. Or either it comes through them, or it is your mercy. Your mercy is your devotees. They are the way you manifest your mercy in the material world. They are the personifications of your mercy. It is not otherwise. So all of this is from, I'm quoting all this from Bhakti Sundarbha. Jiva Goswami. Sada Nugraha. Okay, and here's a quote by Jiva Goswami from Moksha Dharma. When the Lord Krishna glances at someone at the moment of his birth, that person should be understood to be very exalted. That person is meant for liberation. So then he explains what this means. This means by associating with the Lord's devotees, one becomes free from taking another birth in this material world. Okay. Now, Burijan has a very interesting comment here, which I had to repeat. He's talking about, Burijan notices that we take shelter under Krishna's lotus feet. So he said, this boat, instead of going on top, we go under the boat. We hold the boat, it must be, it's like this, its feet are like this, and then we go under and hold on. Burijan has such an imagination. In the material boat, we go on top.
But you need another
pair.
Huh?
No, not under. Anyway. That's not the way I would go under the boat, but I guess, yeah, I would go on the side. I guess, yeah, maybe that's my problem. I go on the side and hold on. Under the boat. Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of faith to go under. Under the boat instead of on top.
One must know how to sleep, my dear.
Well, not if you hold on to the boat. If you're just holding on, then you don't really have to know how to swim.
No. When you touch the lotus feet, usually you touch the top.
I know. But it says in the verse, under the lotus feet somewhere. We take shelter under your lotus feet. I remember there was a verse there. Yeah, it's this verse. When the acharya is complete, he takes shelter under your lotus feet. And it's described also in that Samashitaye verse that the whole material cosmic manifestation is under the lotus feet of Krishna. So, okay. Now another, here is more of Burijan's. I love his comments here. Acharyas leave behind the boat means they leave instructions how to use the boat. This is Burijan's realization. So the verse said, you are this method. Krishna accepts this as a mean to help us. And Burijan asked the question, who is a serious devotee? Because it says you have to be serious here. Or it was the verse before. Says you must be a so. Who is a serious devotee? Someone who holds on tight to the boat. And he says, if the boat is upside down, it's easy to hold. So what happens if someone holds on tightly and sometimes doesn't hold on tightly? He lets go and holds on to something else. This Burijan's. Yeah, so there's, we've got the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, but then there's, you know, the tail of the dog, and there's the stone boat. You know, you can also hold on to those things and think, you think the tail of the dog is, this will get, surely get me across. Modern science can let go of this boat and go and hold on to that tail of a dog. So Burijan says, Sirius means focused like a laser. And he always quotes, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. If your consciousness is diffused, then you become confused. That's so nice. So if you're diffused, also many-branched, we hear from Bhagavad Gita. If you stick to Krishna's mercy, your confusion will be removed. So this verse is all about bhakti, and the next verse will tell another method, and these are the people who fall out of the boat and slip away and hold on to something else. And Burijan will tell you all about it tomorrow. The impersonalists. Not only that, they make offenses to the boat. This is a useless boat.
It exist.
Yes. There is no boat.
Huh? There is a better boat.
Hmm?
There is a better boat.
Yeah, there is a better boat that caused this boat. The Brahmani effulgence. Yes. Other than Iskan boat. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Can you please repeat your breakdown of these middle verses? You said...
First two verses describe the boat. 30, 31. And 32 describes... Oh, yeah. Who... Actually, I can't remember what I said. It was just like inspiration.
31 was the boat.
30 and 31, description of the boat. It's not in my notes.
So that was the right process.
Yeah, and 32 is
those who
miss the boat. Those who miss the boat. They fall down, but again, there's no loss. Yeah. Because 32 will be the impersonalists, and 33 will be about the devotees who fall down. It may fall down in the boat even. May fall in the boat, it may fall out of the boat, but they don't let go of the boat. They may fall out, but they don't let go. They still hold on, even when they fall out of the boat. Yeah. Yeah, it's not in my notes. It's just some of the things I say are just... But you'll see it when after you hear, like you see verse 32, 33, it comes like that. When you hear 33, then it's about the devotees. Impersonalists must fall down, Prabhupada says. Devotees don't fall down. And wonderful comments by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'm sure Rajan will read it for you. About the why so much criticism of the gyanis who fall down, and why not the devotees who fall down? You know. Then he answers the question, that question. If Rajan doesn't read that, I'll read it to you on Thursday. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a really nice comment on that. Okay, any other? Yes. Six Sons of Devaki. That was last week. Oh, no. It's not the six senses. Remember? I remember. There are six anarthas, yes. There are six anarthas, or kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, and matsari. Not six senses. Mind is marichi. And from the mind comes these six sons. The mind is marichi. From marichi come kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya. How can these six sons of material sons appear from the spiritual womb of Devaki? Did we discuss that? No, she's asking how could... Yeah, well, they were cursed. She knows then Krishna comes. Yeah, symbolically we discussed it. But I think she's asking literally why these six particular people, no?
I was not here.
You were not here, okay.
Verse 8. 10 to 8. How is it possible that six material children could appear first? This is
Vedanta. Okay, read that.
How is it possible that six material children very good. Could appear first in the womb of Devaki? Who is the internal spiritual energy
good.
Of the transcendental law? So the answer, just as the material universes exist within the supreme law, but do not contaminate the Lord, the six children could exist within Devaki without contaminating her. This is proven in the Gita 9.2. Matstani sadabhutani najaham tejavan shtitaham. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them.
Okay. So that's... Mishuna Chakravarti Thakur answers your question. And, but also we'll find out that after... So they were, and of course they were demigods, so they weren't ordinary material people. They were from the higher planets originally. They were suras.
Marichi's sons.
Yeah, Marichi's sons. They're sons of, they're grandsons of Brahma. Grandsons of Brahma. So they were pretty high in the universe, the universal cosmic manifestation before. So, so they got the chance to get the association of Devaki. It's described when Krishna brought them back to Devaki, when she asked, please bring my sons back. And they all drank the milk of Devaki, they all became pure. Because Krishna had drunk the milk first. And so everything was very spiritual. So they all got purified drinking Krishna's milk. I mean, the milk that Krishna had, the same, from the same mother. Yeah, they are Marichi's six sons, and they came back. They came back. Krishna brought them back for Devaki. She wanted to see them, and so then they got purified again.
So this kama, lopa, matsarya, krodha, mada,
moha.
Moha.
Yeah, she fed him before he went across. You know, for the trip. Mothers are going to think about that. He needs something for the trip. And so, she did. It's described that somewhere, you know, when you get to the third chapter. It'll be described that she fed him before he went. Yes? Kalanemi. Yes, that's two. There are two versions of who he was. One version is that he is the son of Hiranyakashipu. No, son. The grandsons were these six. They were Hiranyakashipu's grandsons. Were these
uncle of
Ravana?
I read that yesterday.
Okay, he was also in the pastime of churning the ocean of milk. It's described there. He was killed by Lord Vishnu. Mm-hmm. He was a demon who was killed by Lord Vishnu. So, take your pick. Could be the same one. Who knows?
So same one. Had many wives.
Yeah, he had four wives, I think. Four wives. But his name is not mentioned as one of the sons. Sunlad, Alad, well, they're all like that. Lad something. Perlad, Anulad.
So,
I think he had four wives. Or was it four sons from one wife? I can't remember.
And then Kamsa. Such a way that...
Yes, Narada informed him.
Informed him.
Of his previous birth. And inspired him to kill all the sons of Devaki. Yeah. You're reading Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's book and asking me questions. No, Marichi was previous birth. Not that birth. Marichi was the first birth father. Second birth father was Kalanemi. And third birth was Vasudeva. They had three births. Any other questions or comments? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.